Hello, Pillow Talk Audio. It's been quite a while, but I'm back. Finals are finally over and the holidays are here, and I'm just so glad to be free. And I come here this evening, to read you guys a story called Matilda. I don't know if you've read it before, but there's actually a movie, and if you haven't seen that, I suggest that you go and see it because it's very wonderful and it's just the best movie ever. This book is very long, so I'm only going to read one chapter. I mean, it's long compared to most of the stories that I've read. But without further ado, I want you guys to sit back, relax, get yourself your blanket, a cup of coffee, whatever you need to do to just get comfortable. And I am going to tell you a little story that goes something just like this. It's a funny thing about mothers and fathers. Even when their own child is the most disgusting little blister you could ever imagine, they still think that he or she is wonderful. Some parents go further. They become so blinded by adoration, they manage to convince themselves that your child has qualities of genius. Well, there is nothing very wrong with all this. It's the way of the world. It is only when the parents begin telling us about the brilliance of their own revolting offspring that we start shouting, "Bring us a basin! We're going to be sick!" School teachers suffer a good deal from having to listen to this sort of twaddle from proud parents. But they usually get their own back when the time comes to write the end-of-term reports. If I were a teacher, I would cook up some real scorchers for the children of dawning parents. "Your son Maximilian," I'd write, "is a total washout. I hope you have a family business you can push him into when he leaves school, because he sure as heck won't get a job anywhere else." Or, if I was feeling very lyrical that day, I might write, "It is a curious truth that grasshoppers have their hearing organs in the side of their abdomens. Your daughter Vanessa, judging by what she's learned this term, has no hearing organs at all." I might even delve deeper into natural history and say, "The periodical cicada spends 6 years as a grub underground, and no more than 6 days as a free creature of sunlight and air. Your son, Wilfred, has spent 6 years as a grub in this school, and we are still waiting for him to emerge from the chrysalis. A particularly poisonous little girl might sting me into saying, Fiona has the same glacial beauty as an iceberg, but unlike the iceberg, she has absolutely nothing below the surface." I think I might enjoy writing end-of-term reports for the stinkers in my class. But enough of that. We have to get on. Occasionally, one comes from parents who take the opposite line, who show no interest at all in their children, and these, of course, are far worse than the dotty ones. Mr. and Mrs. Wormwood were two such parents. They had a son called Michael and a daughter called Matilda. And the parents looked upon Matilda as nothing more than a scab. A scab is something you have to put up with until its time comes when you can pick it off and flick it away. Mr. and Mr. Wormwood looked forward enormously to the time when they could pick their little daughter off and flick her away. Preferably into the next county or further than that. It is bad enough when parents treat ordinary children as though they're scabs and bunions, but it becomes somehow a lot worse when a child in question is extraordinary, and by that I mean sensitive and brilliant. Matilda was both these things, but above all, she was brilliant. Her mind was so nimble and she was so quick to learn that her ability should have been obvious to even the most half-witted of parents. But Mr. and Mrs. Wormwood were both so gormless and so wrapped up in their own silly little lives that they failed to notice anything unusual about their daughter. To tell the truth, I doubt they would have noticed had she crawled into the house with a broken leg. Matilda's brother, Michael, was a perfectly normal boy, but the sister, as I said, was something to make your eyes pop. By the age of 1 and a half, her speech was perfect, and she knew as many words as most grown-ups. The parents, instead of applauding her, called her a noisy chatterbox and told her sharply that small girls should be seen and not heard. By the time she was 3, Matilda had taught herself to read by studying newspapers and magazines that laid around the house. At the age of 4, she had read fast and well. She could read fast and well, and she naturally began hankering after books. The only book in the whole of this enlightened household was something called Easy Cooking, belonging to her mother. And when she had read this from cover to cover, and had learned all the recipes by heart, she decided she wanted something more interesting. "Daddy," she said, "do you think you could buy me a book?" "A book?" he said. "What you want a flaming book for?"
"To read, Daddy."
"What's wrong with the telly, for heaven's sakes? We've got a lovely telly with 12-inch screen, and now you come asking for a book? You're getting spoiled, my girl." Nearly every weekend afternoon, Matilda was left alone in the house. Her brother, 5 years older than her, went to school. Her father went to work, and her mother went out playing bingo in town 8 miles away. Mrs. Wormwood was hooked on bingo and played it 5 afternoons a week. On the afternoon of the day when her father had refused to buy her a book, Matilda set out all by herself to walk to the public library in the village. When she arrived, she introduced herself to the librarian, Miss Phelps. She asked if she might sit a while and read a book. Mrs. Phelps, slightly taken aback at the arrival of such a tiny girl unaccompanied by a parent, nevertheless told her she was very welcome.
"Where's the children's books, please?"
Matilda asked. "They're over there, on those lower shelves," Mrs. Phelps told her. "Would you like me to help you to find a nice one with lots of pictures in it?"
"No, thank you," Matilda said. "I'm sure I can manage."
From then on, every afternoon, as soon as her mother had left for bingo, Matilda would toddle down to the library. The walk took only 10 minutes, and this allowed her 2 glorious hours sitting quietly by herself in a cozy corner devouring one book after another. When she read every single children's book in the place, she started wandering around in search of something else. Mrs. Phelps, who had been watching her in fascination for the past few weeks, now got up from her desk and went over to her.
"Can I help you, Matilda?" she asked.
"I was wondering what to read next," Matilda said. "I've read all the children's books."
"You mean you've looked at all the pictures?"
"Yes, but I've read the books as well." Mrs. Phelps looked down at Matilda from her great height, and Matilda looked right back at her.
"I thought some were very poor," Matilda said, "but others were lovely. I liked the secret garden best of all. It was full of mystery. The mystery of the room behind the closed doors and the mystery of the garden behind the wall."
Mrs. Phelps was stunned. "Exactly how old are you, Matilda?" she asked.
4 years and 3 months, Matilda said.
Miss Phelps was more stunned than ever, but she had the sense not to show it.
"Which sort of book would you like to read next?" she asked.
Matilda said, "I'd like to read a really good one that grown-ups read. A famous one. I don't know any names."
Mrs. Phelps looked along the shelves, taking her time. She didn't quite know what to bring out.
"How," she asked herself, "does one choose a famous grown-up book for a 4-year-old girl?" Her first thought was to pick up a young teenage romance of the kind that is written for 15-year-old schoolgirls, but for some reason, she found herself instinctively walking past that particular section.
"Try this," she said at last. It's very famous and very good. If it's too long for you, let me know and I'll find something shorter and a bit easier. Great Expectations, Matilda read, by Charles Dickens. I'd love to try it. I must be mad, Mrs. Phelps told herself. But to Matilda, she said, of course you may try it. Over the next few afternoons, Mrs. Phelps could hardly take her eyes off from the small girl sitting for hour after hour in the big armchair at the far end of the room with the book in her lap. It was necessary to rest it on the lap because it was too heavy for her to hold up, which meant she had to sit leaning forward in an order to read. And a strange sight it was, this tiny, dark-haired person sitting there with her feet nowhere near touching the ground, totally absorbed in the wonderful adventures of Pip and old Miss Havisham and her cobwebbed house, and by the spells of magic that Dickens, the great storyteller, had woven with his words. The only movement from the reader was the lifting of the hand every now and then to turn over a page. And Mrs. Phelps felt sad when the time came for her to cross the room and say, It's 10 to 5, Matilda. During the first week of Matilda's visits, Mrs. Phelps had said to her, Does your mother walk you down here every day and then take you home? My mother goes to Aylesbury every afternoon to play bingo, Matilda said. She doesn't know I come here. But that's surely not right, Mrs. Phelps said. I think you'd better ask her. I'd rather not, Matilda said. She doesn't encourage reading books, nor does my father. But what do they expect you to do every afternoon in an empty house? Just mooch around and watch Ted Helly. I see. She doesn't really care what I do, Matilda said a little sadly. Mrs. Phelps was concerned about the children's safety on the walk through the fairly busy village high street and the crossing of the road, but she decided not to interfere. Within a week, Matilda had finished Great Expectations, which in that edition contained 411 pages. I loved it, she said to Mrs. Phelps. Has Mr. Dickens written any others? A great number, said the astounded Mrs. Phelps. Shall I choose you another? Over the next 6 months, under Mrs. Phelps' watchful and compassionate eye, Matilda read the following books. Nicholas Nickleby, by Charles Dickens. Oliver Twist, by Charles Dickens. Jane Eyre, by Charlotte Bronte. Pride and Prejudice, by Jane Austen. Tess of D'Urberville, by Thomas Hardy. Gone to the Earth, by Mary Webb. Kim, by Rudyard Kipling. The Invisible Man, by H.J. Wells. The Old Man and the Sea, by Ernest Hemingway. The Sound and the Fury, by William Faulkner. The Grapes of Wrath, by John Steinbeck. The Good Companions, by J.B. Priestley. Brighton's Rock, by Graham Greene. And Animal Farm, by George Orwell. It was a formidable list, and by now Mrs. Phelps was filled with wonder and excitement. But it was probably a good thing that she did not allow herself to completely be carried away at all. Almost anyone else witnessing the achievements of this small child would have been tempted to make a great fuss and shout the news all over the village and beyond. But not so Mrs. Phelps. She was someone who minded her own business and had long since discovered it was seldom worthwhile to interfere with other people's children. Mr. Hemingway says a lot of things I don't understand, Matilda says to her, especially about men and women. But I love it all the same. The way he tells it, I feel like I'm right there on the spot watching it all happen. A fine writer will always make you feel that, Mrs. Phelps said. And don't worry about the bits you can't understand. Sit back and follow the words
and allow the words to wash around you, like music. I will, I will.
Did you know, Mrs. Phelps said, that public libraries like this allow you to borrow books and take them home?
I didn't know that, Matilda said. Could I do it?
Of course, Mrs. Phelps said. When you have chosen the book you want, bring it to me and I can make a note of it, and it's yours for 2 weeks. You can take more than one if you wish.
From then on, Matilda would visit the library only once a week in order to take out new books and return the old ones. Her own small bedroom now became her reading room, and there she would sit and read most afternoons, often with a mug of hot chocolate beside her. She was not quite tall enough to reach things around the kitchen, but she kept the small box in the outhouse, which she brought in and stood on in order to get whatever she wanted. Mostly it was hot chocolate she made, warming the milk in a saucepan on the stove before mixing it. Occasionally she made Beauville or Ovaltine. It was pleasant to take a hot drink up to her room and have it beside her as she sat in her silent room reading in the empty house for the afternoons. The books transported her into new worlds and introduced her to amazing people who lived exciting lives. She went on olden day sailing ships with Joseph Conrad. She went to Africa with Ernest Hemingway, and to India with Rudyard Kipling. She traveled all over the world while sitting in her little room in an English village.
Whew. That was quite a read, but I hope you guys enjoyed what little I did read. If you did, please tell me so I might read more chapters. But yeah, I'm sorry if I made a little bit of mistakes. I've been trying to pace myself, but I think I did pretty good. But I hope you guys enjoyed the story. I hope you guys are a little bit more relaxed or a little bit better. And I hope you guys have a good day, night, or evening. And I'll see you very soon. Goodbye.